Off, Mr. Mwangi, is he on the phone? Is he going to make it in? His train broke down. Mr. Mwangi.
I believe so.
Amtrak. He had a train problem. This lawyer wanted the next lawyer. That's why I said he'd be on the phone. It's coming? Okay. Mr. Mwangi? Could you speak up? We can't hear you very well.
Can you hear me, Your
Honor? Barely. If you can speak louder, it would help.
Yes, Your Honor. Can you hear me now, Your Honor?
Yes, we can hear you. So you can proceed with your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. I first would like to apologize to the court. I was intending to take the 8 o'clock train, which had maintenance problems, and didn't leave Milwaukee. And so I ended up delayed here, and this is what the clerk suggested, and I thank the court for permitting me to participate by telephone. May please the court, we petition that the court review the decision of the Board of Immigration Appeals, which summarily affirmed BIJ's decision denying relief to marriage and ordering that marriage be removed to Croatia, where marriage claims he suffered persecution and fears returning. The respondents have opposed our petition on three bases, and they cite the argument that this court lacks jurisdiction to review any determination made by the Attorney General regarding the filing of an asylum application more than a year after the arrival of the asylum seeker in the United States. They also argue that
Forgive me, Mr. Mwangi, this is Judge Rovner. Before you go on, even if Mr. Marek could make a valid claim that he had confronted past persecution, could we consider those claims, Section 208A3 of the INA states that we have no jurisdiction to review any determination by the immigration judge made under Section 208A2.
Your Honor, that is a question that I struggled with, and it's a very important question, but I keep going back to the fact that the way that we have these asylum principles is by way of international law, which is by treaty, and treaties that have been ratified by Congress. And the Congress, in its amendment of the asylum laws, intended to do something. And my question when I look at this is whether Congress intended to completely deny review of any kind, which would then raise a constitutional problem, because you can imagine, Your Honor, the situation in which the IJ may decide that only a certain type of asylum applicant can prove extraordinary circumstances, say applicants who have lawyers from Africa. I mean, it would be good for me, because then I have a perfect retirement plan. So if this court is barred completely from reviewing any determination, how then do we ensure that the Constitution is a question, and I've struggled with it in trying to figure out how to address that issue before today. And Judge Roebner, I don't have a perfect answer for you, but I would think that the court would look at what Congress intended. Because if Congress says someone who's delayed more than a year to file his asylum application can show extraordinary circumstances, then my immediate reaction is that is a legal determination. What is or is not extraordinary circumstances? And that begs review because in Merrick's case, for example, the judge said that it's not responsible that he delayed filing, but then it says psychological report does not establish that his failure was due to serious illness. It is almost as if the IJ is saying a psychologist cannot establish serious illness. That kind of bars a whole class of experts from appearing in cases such as this one. And to me, that's troubling because I don't think under Dover the IJ is permitted, and this court has affirmed that principle, is permitted to defeat an expert without a rebuttal expert from the other side. In other words, once the IJ permitted Dr. Volovich to testify as an expert, and Dr. Volovich opined that this man was suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, chronic depression, etc., etc., the IJ could not then totally disregard what Dr. Volovich said in her report. Yes, I see that there's a problem because the statute says you may not review the determinations, but that creates a significant constitutional problem because I don't think the IJ decision here reaches the correct conclusion, and the means the IJ follows are, to me, objectively wrong because in Neon versus Ashcroft, this court held that if an expert is established and credentials are in the record, the expert's opinion counts. And Dr. Volovich was, in attendance. She was available by telephone. But even if she was not, her testimony was admitted by the judge without objection from the INS counsel. So it seems terribly unfair that the judge would admit testimony and yet disregard it. And if this court cannot review that, there is a breakdown system at that point. But that need not be the issue that decides the case. There's other things in this case that are troubling and should be troubling to this court. When the respondents argue that there's no compelling evidence that the IJ's decision should be reversed, they then repeat what the IJ said and argue that marriage has not shown that he was physically mistreated. Well, I don't know what the definition of physical mistreatment they are using is, but when someone is, put in a chair with his hands handcuffed behind him and then hit in the face with a fist to the point of falling out of the chair, and then he bleeds from the nose and he's hit with a truncheon in the chest and the head in the back for 6 hours, and then a gun put in front of him suggesting, "I'm going to shoot you," and a big knife put in front of him, perhaps suggesting he's going to cut your throat. And then he is sent to a front where he's barely fed and he loses 35 pounds. And then he's put in dilapidated housing while out there. He contracts an infection to his ear, which spreads to his eyes and mouth. It must have been so terrible because the U.S. security officer noticed that this guy needed to be treated and insisted that he be sent to a military hospital. And yet, the IJ says he was not physically mistreated. He was allegedly struck. I mean, it seems that the IJ has at once
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mwanga. Ms. Smith?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The record evidence in this case does not compel reversal of the immigration judge's determination that petitioner established a clear probability that he will be persecuted if he is returned to Croatia. As we explained in our brief, this is the only issue before the Court. The Court lacks jurisdiction over the asylum claim pursuant to Section 208A3 of the Immigration and Nationality Act, as well as precedent of this Court, because the immigration denied the claim on petitioner's untimely submission of his application.
Now,
is
it possible that severe depression and post-traumatic stress disorder could constitute the type of extraordinary circumstances that might legitimately prevent an applicant from applying for asylum within 1 year of entry?
I think in a given case, if facts are looked at, it possibly could. I don't think those facts exist here. I mean, again, we don't believe the Court has jurisdiction to even look at the issue. But beyond that, the facts as presented wouldn't establish that here.
Why doesn't it excuse his tardiness in this case? Why wouldn't it?
And again, this Court can't look at the issue, but in looking at the issue, the IJ had the evaluation before him, and it was rather conclusory. I mean, the doctor did not provide any significant reasons as to why the delay occurred. She indicated there was post-traumatic syndrome, but she didn't indicate that stopped him from filing his application or anything along those lines, didn't provide any kind of a timeline. So there was nothing in that report which would have made the judge determined that, in fact, the basis for the delay in filing was because of that. I mean, here the individual came to the United States on several occasions. He left initially in 93. His last entry was in 96. The asylum application wasn't filed until 2000. So there were so many factors that occurred in that interim that the facts just wouldn't support any kind of a post-traumatic syndrome, and then specifically the evaluation provided by the doctor here.
Now, we have there are cases where even though a person is not in danger of being persecuted, he's nevertheless allowed to claim asylum on the basis of past persecution, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, isn't his psychiatric evidence relevant to that? That is, why wouldn't this be a situation where, because of the persecution that he was subjected to, combined with his own mental problems, even though he wouldn't be persecuted if he returned to Croatia?
Well, the issue here is withholding of removal, and it is true the issue here before this Court is withholding of removal. And if past persecution is established, then there is a rebuttable presumption with respect to withholding removal. But here, past persecution hasn't been established.
No, but suppose it has been. Suppose past persecution has been established, but not future persecution.
If it's determined that there is no future persecution, then the past persecution has to be so severe. In this Court, in a decision back in, I believe, 1997, the Beaucaire, B-U-C-U-R decision, indicated that would indicate something like the Jews in Nazi Germany or the Cambodian genocide. I mean, that's not the kind of case we have here. The facts here are very simple. I mean, what petitioner refers to as past persecution in the record, and not in his brief, because in his brief he suggests that he was sent into minefields. There's absolutely nothing in the record would indicate that occurred. What he indicated at the merits hearing was that he was made to sign an oath to Croatia. He was assigned some menial tasks when he was in the police force. He was drafted into the military. He contracted an ear infection and didn't receive immediate attention. And that while he was being interrogated as to whether he was a spy because of his daily contact with Serbia, he was struck on one occasion, and then he was hit a couple of times. He did not testify that he was repeatedly beaten, as is suggested in petitioner's brief. He was asked, was anything other than fists used? He did indicate a police baton was used, but he didn't say how and when that was used in his testimony. So here, what the IJ looked at in determining that the requirements for withholding of removal had not been met was first that although the record evidence showed that there's discrimination and harassment against Serbs in Croatia, it didn't rise to the level of persecution. And then in looking back said, what do we have here? We have one instance of physical mistreatment. And again, that was a situation where he was struck once in the face and, according to his own testimony, hit another couple of times. That's not the kind of severe past persecution that this court has determined would amount to something that would allow a presumption of future persecution. And petitioner's brief tends to suggest the persecution was greater than that, but it really isn't. We would also point out that this isn't the kind of a case where, although petitioner suggests he might be harmed for evading the draft, he doesn't specifically provide any proof of that. When he was asked at the merits hearing what would happen to him if he returned, he said, I don't know. You know, maybe they'll do something to me because I evaded the draft, but there's nothing in the record of the country report that shows draft evaders are in any way persecuted, let alone persecuted as he would need to show because of his Serbian ethnicity. And there's also no indication that there's any kinds of threats, as petitioner suggests in his brief. And the only threat that he seems to refer to is the fact that when one of the police officers was interrogated him, he took off his jacket and he put his gun and his knife on the table. And from that, he says, well, you could infer that he was threatening me. I mean, that's not the kind of threats that this court has ever held that could constitute persecution. And as we've indicated in our brief as well, this court has no jurisdiction over the basis grounds of asylum based on humanitarian grounds. This issue was not raised before the board. Moreover, because his application was untimely, he's not entitled to asylum based on humanitarian grounds. In short, petitioners failed to demonstrate that the record evidence compels reversal of the immigration judge's determination that he feared to establish that a clear probability exists that his life or freedom would be threatened on account of his Serbian ethnicity if he is returned to Croatia.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Smith. Mr. Mwanga, how much time is he? You have 1 minute, Mr. Mwanga.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would like to address Ms. Smith's statement that we have filed basically a brief which we're making of parts of the record. Our brief and statement of facts cites to the record, and we stand by those citations. The respondent's brief did not point to anything in our brief that does not exist in the record, and I'm sure that if they had found something we made up, they would have pointed to it. And yes, we will use the facts to our advantage as we see fitting, and we're going to zealously advocate for our client, but I believe it is wrong for the respondent to suggest that made up facts, because our brief contains citations and the court can see for itself whether those facts exist in this record or not. We urge the court to reverse the IJ's decision.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Mwangi. Thank you to both counsel. And the court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.